to me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. And I welcome you from all over the world. You can also watch today's program by going to Ustream channel and searching for Gary Knoll. And for those of you who are not aware of it, we can be reached on many different ways. We can be reached, one, by listening live over your local radio. But that's becoming less and less. The terrestrial radio stations are diminishing because the cost of maintaining radio stations. So then people are going to the internet, where there are tens of thousands of programs. So it's a great venue, depending upon what your needs are. You'll have multiple sources to supply those needs. So it's very competitive. But then how do you listen? You can stand in front of a computer, sit in front of a computer, or you can listen over the telephone. And that's much easier. So no matter where you're at right now, if you have any portable listening device, if you're in a cab, put it on speakerphone. Let the people in the cab hear the show. Here's the number to listen live over the telephone. 6 times a week, Monday through Friday, Eastern Standard Time, noon to 1, Tuesday, 7 to 8 p.m. 701-801-3662. But here's what's interesting. I wouldn't have known this. 99% of the people who are going to listen to this program listen at night over the internet, frequently downloading it and listening by their telephone. Here's that number to listen to the archives. That number is, listening live, 701-801, excuse me, that's, I'm getting the same number. I think we have, my engineer, we have a different number there. When that number comes up, I'll give you the correct number. In any case, here's what we have planned today. Part two of my special on vaccines. Yesterday, I told you about the flu vaccine and why it was not something you should rush into unless you at least you know the other side. Are flu vaccines safe and effective? The science does not support that. To the contrary, there was much as a 500% increase in adverse reactions. So that's one thing I'm going to get to. Then the latest on health and healing. For those of you who go to exotic places, generally not in the United States, but in the Far East, and you're starting to eat that shark fin soup and the meat containing the shark. Well, think again, University of Miami, high levels of neurotoxins linked to Alzheimer's in that. Not good. Also from Lund University in Sweden, the association between sugar in your diet and coronary artery disease. Also how your diet can influence your environmental impact. University of Technology in Sydney. And supplementation with vitamin C and vitamin E will show a decrease in your cognition impairment. And that's from the Quebec Research Center. And University of Massachusetts studies show licorice, that's licorice root, is a way of improving your breast cancer survival. Also today, I'm going to go into some brief commentaries on the environment. The Great Fukushima Cover-Up. I'm going to deal with that. And goodbye to the middle class. 51% of all Americans are making less than $30,000 a year. That's 50%. So how are we supposed to be a consumer-driven society when we don't have consumers who have enough money to buy anything? The other day, I was taking a walk. And one of the ways I like to relax at night, so after I've counseled people, after I've done written my commentaries for the next day, I then take a walk. And I walk down Columbus Avenue to Lincoln Center, turned around, walked back up Broadway. I just decided to count how many empty businesses I saw. Now, on the weekend, I had gone down to Soho. I like to do a long walk on. I go down to West Broadway, and Houston, And then I just counted how many of the buildings that are some of those popular buildings in all of New York are empty. And I was just blown away. 14 on just one street. Now, 5 years ago, that would have been almost zero. And so I stopped and I went in and I spoke with the people. Why are so many people going out? Well, the rents. And we just don't have the people buying. We have people coming down, window shopping, but they're not buying. We never think about this. This is not on the national agenda. It's not on anyone's talking points. It's not an issue. We have taken for granted the one group of people who employ more Americans than the Fortune 500 companies and the U.S. government combined, the small business person, the backbone of the entire American economy. They have been betrayed. They have been destroyed. And who is one of the top people involved in that destruction? The so-called progressive, so-called liberal, Mayor de Blasio. So we have someone in the studio today, two people who I know very well, who have a petition to ask him to resign. Now, he's not going to resign, but you're going to find out why you should be concerned about what de Blasio and the people in the local council are doing to encourage the major businesses to take over the small business spots. And the small people are leaving. Why? By choice? Not when you've soaked your life savings into a small business. You don't want to leave. But you have no choice. What's going on? The destruction of the small business people in New York, but also around the United States. An in-depth discussion. Also today, we're going to have a look at what's really going on and why we should be concerned when nonviolent, very peaceful, Native American demonstrators and others who are not Native American but support their cause are being beaten, shot with rubber bullets, brutalized, all because they want to protect what was rightfully and legally theirs, based upon treaty, from the pipeline going through their property. Where's Hillary Clinton? Well, surely she supports the Native Americans. Surely she doesn't support big oil. Surely she wouldn't be taking money from big oil. She wouldn't be taking money from Wall Street, who finances big oil. She wouldn't be Michael Moore. Are you listening? Because, Michael, you want everyone to vote for her. Well, today I've got some reasons why we should stop before we take your advice and look at what we would actually be getting. And I'll share that with you. The whole world is watching. We'll share that with you. And how Jill Stein thinks Hillary Clinton is scarier than Trump, and also why third-party votes do matter, they are not a waste. I had a discussion, more of a debate, with one of the leading people in the building where I live, and who prides herself on being a former president of a major corporation, why she's so smart. She's going to vote for Hillary. So I just asked her some questions. She couldn't answer one. And that's concerning because she represents a lot of the minds at the so-called intelligentsia of New York. Well, you're not as smart as you think, but you are certainly as arrogant as you believe. I'm going to take an issue with the so-called liberal establishment in New York. In my opinion, you're an embarrassment. You're misinformed. You're uninformed. But you sure are attached to your ideology and belief. And for that, we all have to suffer. I'll share my point of view on that later. So we have a lot to talk about. First up, we're going to talk about sharks and why we shouldn't be eating them. We shouldn't be eating anything from the ocean. And by the way, fish feel pain. The latest study shows that when you catch the fish, it feels pain. But the fish have interesting life stories, how they live together, how they protect each other, and we're completely clueless about it. Remember, on any issue in life, not just fish, as long as we stay intentionally ignorant, then we can stay intentionally connected to our comfort and addictions. We grew up in a family where everyone smoked. They were good people. They were loving parents, in-laws, friends, and family. Didn't have the issues with him on a temperament level. course, you have disagreements on things. That's normal. But they cared about us. I only wish they would have cared about themselves. They all smoked. It was considered a light smoker if you smoked 2 packs a day, a moderate smoker 3 packs, and a heavy smoker 4. My older brother Howard smoked 4-pack cigarettes a day. And I can remember on his 60th birthday, him arguing with me about, look, he's been smoking, you know, for 45 years, and he doesn't have anything wrong with him. And I said, you don't know if you have anything wrong. 6 months later, he had terminal lung cancer. You don't know something's wrong until you have your heart attack, your stroke. People ate the wrong food. They didn't exercise. They drank, not to get drunk, but they drank socially, and they smoked. Everything you could possibly do wrong to hurt the cell, they did. So just remember, when you're eating fish today, you're eating fish that are contaminated with toxins, with mercury, with radioactive materials from Fukushima that is still pouring. Over 100,000 tons of radioactive water a day into the Pacific. And it's not stopped since the explosion. But we never talk about it, as if somehow that no longer is important. It is important. If you're eating seaweed from Japan, it's important. If you're eating mushrooms grown without water, it's important. If you're eating fish from anywhere in the Pacific, it's important. But our ignorance of not knowing, I don't want to know where my fish comes from. I don't want to know where my seaweed comes from. It means that you could be paying a price. And that's what this study from the University of Miami, quote, University of Miami scientists found high concentrations of toxins linked to neurodegenerative diseases in the fins and muscles of sharks. The research team suggests that restricting the consumption of sharks can have a positive health benefit for consumers and for shark conservation. So remember, you eat a shark, you're hurting your brain. Also, how diet can influence your environmental impact. Now, this is from the University of Technology in Sydney, Australia. This was published in Frontiers Nutrition. They're saying, and rightly so, quote, a shift towards a plant-based, there's your vegan diet, may be an undervalued solution towards decreasing our environmental impact and attaining phosphorus sustainability. Phosphorus is an element essential for all living beings and is thus critical in food production. Mine phosphate rock is a non-renewable global resource that is nowadays becoming increasingly scarce, which poses a severe problem to the farming industry. It needs phosphorus in the form of fertilizers to sustain crop productivity. Crops have two entries into the human food chain, direct consumption or indirect consumption, by rearing animals which can be converted to human food. Different food types, therefore, require different amounts of phosphorus in their produce. 1 kilogram of phosphorus can be used to produce 3,360 kilograms, that's 2.2 pounds per kilogram, so you're dealing with almost 7,000 pounds of potatoes, but only 32 pounds of beef. So just look at this, 7,000 pounds, 32 pounds. And by the way, that's just on phosphorus. How about water? How much water does it require to have 1 hamburger full of meat produced? 3,200 gallons. How much to produce an organic potato? 1 potato? 50 gallons. 50 gallons? 3,200 gallons. And yet we're scarce on water. So wouldn't it make sense to reduce our reliance upon animals and go towards a plant-based diet, also to save the environment? Now, from Lund University, there's a very good study on the association between sugar in the diet and coronary artery disease. Quote, what connection is there between food and drink with added sugar and coronary artery disease? Until recently, the question had been inadequately answered by research, but an extensive study from Lund University has now contributed important clues. The study in question focused on sucrose, that's your white sugar. Sucrose occurs naturally in fruits and vegetables, but the majority of our consumption is through added sucrose. Besides sweetened beverages, cakes, and sweets, sucrose is added to ordinary foods, dairy products, breads, jams. And, quote, for the vast majority, the consumption of added sugar does not appear to be a problem with regard to what we study. The risk of developing myocardial infarction, that's heart attacks, and added serious heart disease. But for a number of people with high consumption of added sugar, the picture was different. These participants had an increased risk of myocardial infarction by almost 33%. So, here's what it's saying. 33% of the people having that extra sugar could have a heart attack and die. Do you want to play those odds? What if you knew that if you could die, 1 in 3, so 2 times you get away with it, 3rd time you don't. But here's another question. That's one study. What happens if you consume sugar several times a day? So for the first month, 2 months, 3 months, you're consuming that extra sugar each day, nothing happens. The odds are it's going to. When your odds are 1 in 3 of developing a heart attack and probably dying, do you really want to play Russian roulette? Do you want to be Christopher Walken in the last scene in The Deer Hunter, where you're in a Saigon bar, drugged and doped out, no meaning to life, put a bullet in a chamber, spin it, everyone plays their bet, and if you lose the bet, your brains are on the wall. That's what you're doing when you're eating the sugar. So ask yourself, are you lucky? You think you're lucky? Well, just remember what I'm saying. When you grab your chest, you get dizzy, you're looking to the ceiling, and you're thinking, well, I shouldn't have done it. But we will continue to, because the fact that we're given information can change our lives doesn't mean that we have the will to, nor the will to stop our unhealthy conditioned response. We should have a national program on deconditioning the human mind. You see, I don't believe we need another study in history on anything. I believe that we have all the studies we need. We don't need another study showing what television will do, what violent sports will do. We don't need another study showing if you're playing football, you know, for 10 years, how likely you are to have a brain that's going to be mush and from the traumas. We don't need another study. We don't need another study showing how many more carcinogens you have to take before you're susceptible to carcinogenic activity and then create cancer. We don't need another study on anything. This is a game we play. This is a game the manufacturers play, that Edward Bernays played. He says, let me condition the people and you can sell them anything. In fact, they hired feminists back in the 1930s to make a point that women who smoke were more liberated. And it worked. And think of all, including my mother, think of all the people that smoked, that if you ask them, is this good? It's my right to smoke. I didn't ask about your right. Is it good for you? That was never part of the issue. A lot of the things we think liberate us also kill us. You see, your freedom to express your life, if you do it in a meaningful and spiritual and balanced way, is good. If you do it without any boundaries, it's anarchy. And see where anarchy leads you when it comes to your health. So you see, the game they're playing is something we know is bad. We have evidence is bad. They'll say, not enough studies. And then they kick it through a whole process of so-called experts, all of whom have been bought. No, don't confuse the length of their pedigreed resume with the fact that they have sold you out. And then they say, well, we're not sure if sugar's bad. We're not sure that dairy causes allergy. We're not sure that GMOs are really harmful. We can't really say for sure that acidification of our water is bad for the ocean. We can't say that global warming is humanly caused. We can't say, and they'll always have experts who are trying to convince us that we're not smart enough. Therefore, we have to have an official truth. So we all live by official truths.
if you're a liberal Democrat, you live by the New York Times, and we saw what kind of compromised people they are. Or CNN. Or any of them. Even Pacifica programs that advocate vaccination, that advocate going into Syria, that advocate, you know, the overthrow of Libya. Are they there to take responsibility for all the dead bodies? No, they don't have to. When you make a mistake and you're in power or you're popular, everything is deferred or deflected for you by your supporters or who you're associated with. So we keep being told we don't have to change anything in life. We don't have to change from a two-party system. So you've got to vote for the lesser of two evils. No, you don't. But as long as your condition believe otherwise, doesn't matter what truth prevails, you're going to. And that's the way it is. So I'm suggesting a completely different way of looking at life. Stop waiting for the next 10,000th study to prove that what you're doing is bad. If you've got to be convinced by more and more and more and more and more and more and more, then you're the problem, not what you're trying to get off of. I call this intentional neglect, where we intentionally neglect what would free us, what would honor us, what would enlighten us, because then we would have to deal with the truth. We're addicted to our comforts. We're addicted to our beliefs. And we don't want to change them. So then you get the game. And once you're in the game, you'll never win. And that's the way it works. If we found out something that we were all consuming today was bad, it would take 30 years to finally get rid of it. We're responsible. So we've got to get smarter than the choices we make. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. By the way, the second part of our series today on vaccines, I gave part one yesterday, the entire article with all of its footnotes is about what's wrong with the flu vaccine and how all their figures are wrong. For example, how many times we hear the same identical talking points? If you went into every single news broadcast in America, whoever's talking about the flu say, well, you know, for decades it was 36,000 people a year dying of flu. Wasn't true. 35,000 were dying of pneumonia, under 1,000 dying of the flu. Now it's 55,000 dying of flu. Wrong again. It's only 3% are dying of the flu. The rest are dying of pneumonia. Well, pneumonia is not the flu. And a flu shot will not help you with pneumonia. So it's all propaganda by the vaccine maker to get you to take a shot that makes them a profit. And if you should die or get sick, no sweat on them because they don't have to be held accountable. They managed to get a law passed, which Hillary Clinton will mandate everyone get their shots. And so remember, when you vote for Hillary, you're voting for Big Pharma. They control her. She is completely supported. And also Big Agra, Monsanto, GMOs. Oh, and big banking and bailouts and bail-ins, where we lose our money in the bank. If one of them fails, they take our money and give us a stock in the company, which is worth nothing. Oh, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the TTIP and the World Health Organization and the World Trade Organization and everything that we should be opposed to, that's what you're getting. So I'm opposed to mandatory vaccines. Here's why I'm opposed to the flu shot. Part two. The CDC currently recommends that elderly Americans receive a flu shot stating that vaccination is especially important for people 65 and older because they are at high risk for complications from flu, end quote. Unfortunately, this warning is grossly unfounded. It is simply untrue. A significant body of research proves that receiving the flu shot does not reduce mortality among seniors. One particularly compelling study was carried out by scientists at the Federal National Institutes of Health and published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Not only did the study indicate that the flu vaccine did nothing to prevent deaths from influenza among seniors, but that flu mortality rates increased as a greater percentage of seniors received the shot. After the release of the study, investigative journalist Cheryl Atkinson covered the findings in a CBS News segment. Atkinson's interviewed the only co-author of the study who was not affiliated with the National Institutes of Health, Dr. Tom Reichert, who stated that the research team revisited the data several times, meaning they went back over and over and over again, but that no matter how many times they analyzed, quote, the incendiary material, the conclusion was clear. Flu shots do not improve death rates in the elderly population. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who I interviewed, reviewed the Cochrane database, and the Cochrane database is the most respected group of independent scientists in the world. Them, you can trust. The ones in America, you cannot. And they reviewed everything in the world on the flu vaccine's efficacy. In reviewing the 51 studies involving over 294,000 children, there was, quote, listen carefully, this is the report, no evidence that injecting children 6 to 24 months of age with a flu shot was any more effective than a placebo. In children over 2 years of age, the flu vaccine effectiveness was 33%, and in children with asthma, inactivated flu vaccine did not prevent influenza-related hospitalizations in children. The database shows that children who received the flu vaccine, listen carefully, were at the higher risk of hospitalization than children who did not receive the vaccine. Did you hear about this? No. And yet, when I watched a television commercial last night promoting the vaccine, it was showing children and toddlers, the very ones who will not benefit but have a higher incidence of going to the hospital. And by the way, they're using mercury, 24 micrograms, which is a neurotoxin, in every one of those flu vaccines. In a separate study involving 400 children with asthma receiving a flu vaccine and 400 who were not immunized, quote, there was no difference in the number of clinic and emergency room visits and hospitalizations between the two groups. So if you have an opportunity to take a sugar pill or a vaccine, they're both going to give you the same outcome, but there will be one that will create toxins in your blood, in your body, in your brain, and that's the flu vaccine. In 64 separate studies involving 66,000 adults, quote, vaccination of healthy adults only reduced the risk of influenza by 6%. But let's reverse it. 96% of all the people who got the flu vaccine were not protected at all. So how lucky are you? You think that you're not going to have an adverse effect to the flu and the ingredients in it? The most you could expect is 6 out of every 100 to be benefited. There was a change in the hospitalizations. More people who got the vaccine were hospitalized than non-vaccinated. And during every annual quarter, the CDC's Advisory Commission on Childhood Vaccine meets, and the Department of Justice releases its report on settlements made for vaccine injuries and deaths. In recent years, the flu vaccine was number one, meaning the government had to pay out more money because more people were injured or died using the flu vaccine than any other vaccine. During its most recent year, up through June of 2016, they had the most amount of cases, almost 60% of the cases, including deaths, that were settled in the vaccine court were for flu vaccine. For almost a decade, the CDC has known influenza vaccines are ineffective and life-threatening for the elderly, but continues to market them without hesitation. Hence, in November 2014, five senior citizens in an assisted living facility in Dacula, Georgia, died within a week after all the residents were vaccinated. During the previous year's flu vaccine trials, Santa Fe Pasteur's flu zone killed 23 elderly participants during the vaccine trial. Nevertheless, the vaccine was approved and continues to be marketed towards senior citizens. So here's a question. What if it's your mom or dad that are likely not to be benefited and actually could die, all to make profit for a company that has its lobbyists influence the FDA, that has more scientists who have conflicts of interest sitting on the FDA's advisory board? So the very people who have a conflict of interest are at the FDA determining what gets produced. Today, the most extreme wing of the pro-vaccine community, headed by Dr. Paul Offit at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, have been diligently pursuing mandatory vaccination and encouraging states to repeal personal, religious, and philosophical exemptions from vaccination. During the flu season, the debate over mandatory vaccination becomes most heated as medical facilities and government departments attempt to threaten employees and schools who refuse to vaccinate. Although this is deeply worrisome to those who advocate their constitutional rights to freedom of choice in their health care, there are respectable groups opposing mandatory flu shots. Among the groups that are opposing mandatory flu shots are the American Medical Association, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, and according to the statement of the latter, the association, quote, objects strenuously to any coercion of healthcare personnel to receive influenza immunization. It is a fundamental human right not to be subjected to medical interventions without fully informed consent, end quote. The American Medical Association statement recognized, quote, philosophical reasons as a valid means for exemption. In addition, many union organizations such as the National Nurses United, the American Federation of Teachers, and the Coalition of Kaiser Permanente Unions now oppose mandatory flu shots. What these organizations recognize is categorically denied by Paul Offit and the pro-vaccine cabal, and it's hard science that is raising the questions over the flu vaccine's efficacy and safety that doesn't justify a national mandate. The good news is that Americans are rapidly losing confidence in the CDC, in my opinion, a completely corrupt organization. According to the National Consumers League poll, over two-thirds of Americans believe vaccines cause autism, which the CDC categorically denies. Almost 2 months after the media reported on the revelations by CDC whistleblower Dr. William Thompson, who exposed the CDC cover-up of a vaccine autism connection with the MMR vaccine, a CBS poll showed public approval of the CDC nosediving to 32%. Before then, it had been 60%. And just so we remember, it was Dr. Thompson who headed a MMR and measles, mumps, rubella study. And in this study, they found there was a 324% increase in autism or like conditions or brain dysfunction in African-American children 36 months and under who took it. They tried to manipulate, change the data. It didn't work. So he called all the people at the CDC who participated to bring black garbage bags to his office, and they tried to destroy all the evidence. But at the last moment, he thought, what if I'm called to testify? What if this gets out? What if there's a Freedom of Information Act and I obstruct? Obstruction of justice is a federal crime. You're no longer protected by indemnification of the government. So he kept a copy. He then had some conscious adjustment, and he called a man named Dr. Brian Hooker, and whose son had been injured with vaccines, and he went through a mea culpa over the telephone. What he did not know was Hooker was recording the conversations. We played those conversations. We were the first radio show in America to play those on the air. And there's he's admitting. He's admitting they falsified the studies. Interesting, the very studies they falsified were the ones that would have exonerated completely Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who had been excoriated and lost his medical license in England by stating in the small group of 12 children that he and this whole group of gastroenterologists had found a connection between their vaccines and autism conditions that were manifesting in their intestine. So everything that was done by the American media, including Anderson Cooper on CNN, Dr. Gupta, and others, was to attack and destroy the reputation of an innocent, honest physician. No one has apologized to him. So the movie Vaxxed is one way for the public to be aware of how you've been lied to and manipulated by the CDC. Now, all the information that Dr. Thompson had, he gave to a legislator in Florida who read it into the congressional record. That was 2 years ago. He's asked for congressional testimony. When finally, just 2 weeks ago, Dr. Thompson was ready to go before Congress, a committee, and talk about the down and dirty, the bad and corrupt science of the CDC and who was involved, he was told he couldn't by his superiors. And so that's where we're at. And this is an organization that the American media chooses to accept their opinion as factual, as a gold standard. No, they're a criminal organization. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Hitting on the issues that the mainstream media won't touch, and if they do, it's all from official experts who are always wrong. They're always on the side of the money. Money's always on the side of power. And power defies itself by never allowing truth or transparency. I don't care if it's corporate power. I don't care if it's a local station board run by a group of scorpions in a cocktail glass fighting each other. You come up with the same thing. I don't care if you're the poorest of the poor, the richest of the rich. Power corrupts completely. You don't have to be rich or famous to abuse power. And we see it all the time. So now we're at that point where we're told, well, we got to vote for Hillary Clinton. And when I ask, do you know what she's done in the past? No, they don't. Then she's going to do more than when I tell them what she's done. She's really done that? I just give one example. To my neighbor, I said, do you believe in children? You have two. Do you believe in children's rights? Of course. What would I say, what would you say if I told you Hillary and Bill Clinton were responsible for 500,000 Iraqi children dying? Personally, no one else in the world. They alone, those two people caused 500,000 children to die. Well, that's not possible. It is. Do you want me to provide you with a Leslie Stahl 60 Minutes interview with Madeleine Albright, their Secretary of State, who said, is it acceptable for 500,000 children to die so we could keep the sanctions? And she said, yes, it's acceptable. What if that were your two children that were going to be sacrificed? Would then it be acceptable? Is it okay if they're a person of color and poor in some other country? Is that all right for your Upper West Side mindset? Because I can assure you, if the people in this building had their children being sacrificed by sanctions by anyone in this government, there'd be holy hell to pay. I said, so what you don't know is the problem. Here's what they have to say about a third-party vote being wasted.
It's looking like Hillary is going to win.
For sure.
For sure.
There's no doubt Hillary's going to win.
But my argument is that she's been, you know, she was a shoe-in from the start.
From the start.
Terrible happened. And now it looks like she might actually do better than Obama did in 2012.
And that's a bad thing.
2008. Well, I'll get to that. So it's, you know, she might take Indiana.
Right.
I mean, there's talk of South Carolina and
right.
Georgia and Arizona and Nevada.
Texas.
Texas even potentially in play. And so we're looking possibly at a landslide victory for Hillary.
Yeah.
And, you know, 350, 400 electoral votes are not, you know, out of the bounds of possibility. So what's going to happen if that is the case, if she wins and wins big and wins a landslide, her response to that is going to be, I was right to move to the center,
yes,
to embrace the corporatists, to embrace the center, to embrace the moderates, the corporatists, and to abandon the Bernie supporters. I was right not to embrace them, and to, you know, I threw them a bone, but I can now abandon the minimum wage. I can abandon, you know, I can embrace TPP wholeheartedly. All of the stuff that we suspect she's going to do anyway, this will give her license to do it. So the question is, as progressives, what do we do? It would seem like it is incumbent on us, not just in the states like California and New York, where she's guaranteed to win, but even in swing states, to vote for Jill Stein, or vote a third party, or write in Bernie, or whatever you want to do, to deny the vote to Hillary, because the mandate that she's going to claim is a mandate that means no, she's not going to have to pursue progressive values at all.
This is such a great point. This is a very, very important point. I think if you are a progressive, you need to hear what Malcolm's saying. And what you're saying is that it's important that as many of us who vote third party do. And because we don't want to give her such a huge victory, because if she gives a in a landslide, which is what everybody says it looks like she's going to win in a landslide, then she's just going to go further and further right. It's never going to.
She's already inclined to take that message away.
She already went to the right after Bernie.
Yes.
She already went, look, I was right to be a centrist. I was right to embrace right-wing policies. I was right to do that because I beat Bernie. That even though the progressives are loud, they're a small group of people. And so I'm going to go, and she's been, ever since Bernie dropped out, she's been spending the whole time courting Republicans. You know that. And so that's because, and that's who she likes. That's who
right.
she wants to work with.
I mean, she's like, hey, John Negroponte, Henry Kissinger,
literal war criminals. And then she calls Donald Trump's people the basket of deplorables. And she's hanging out. She's a deplorable. She voted for the Iraq War. Anyway, so your point is saying that it's very important we vote for Jill Stein because we want to get her to 5% so the Greens get federal funding.
That's another issue as well.
Super important. But even more important right now is that it takes away Hillary Clinton's huge landslide. She's going to win anyway. Take away her landslide. Don't give her that mandate.
Deny
that's what
her
you're
the
saying.
Mandate. And the argument could be made. I'm not making this. I mean, this is all sort of theoretical for me because I firmly believe in just voting for the candidate who represents the values that you want, you know, whatever the policies you want to pursue, vote for that person. And I don't do this eight-dimensional chess. Oh, well, I'm going to deny. Well, I'll trade a vote with somebody in a swing state. All this stuff. Just vote for who you want to be president. But that said, if you're going to think like this and you believe, as we do, that a mandate for her is the death knell for progressive policies for the next 4 years, then you could argue that a vote for, as many people have said, a vote for Jill Stein is a vote for Donald Trump. But we know it's not.
It's not. A vote for Jill Stein is not a vote for Donald Trump. A vote for Jill Stein is a vote for the Green Party. And we want to get him to 5%. That's what a vote for Jill Stein is. And a vote for Donald Trump is a vote for Donald Trump. Whereas a vote for Hillary Clinton is a vote for more war and for Goldman Sachs.
But in this case, a vote for Donald Trump could be seen as a vote for progressive values because you want to bring his margin up. I could never do that.
No.
But you could, I mean, the case could be made.
Yeah.
That, look, it's not. These are the people who say, look, we have a two-party system.
We have
a two-party system. I'm just saying, you know, if you're going to follow this to
no.
its logical conclusion,
don't
I doubt any of our viewers could do that.
Don't say that.
But I
do not endorse this.
But my point overall is the bankruptcy of our political system.
Yes, it's completely
that it really,
bankrupt.
You could make a logical case why to achieve progressive policies in the near future, your best course of action is to vote for Donald Trump. You would never set up a system like this unless you were a member of one of those two parties. This does not serve the American public, but you cannot argue under current circumstances, if you are thoughtful and you're progressive, you could not make a case for voting for Hillary Clinton. There's no way.
That's correct. And also, look philosophically. Yes, we will lose this election. Absolutely. But with 5% of the vote, that means that we have a platform to go forward. We will then have time to get the best progressive minds from all areas of life together and start putting into place the proposals for changing America and taking back the power from the oligarchs, from the corrupt government bureaucracies, so that the people have opportunities. We cannot do that if those people think, well, I'm just going to waste my vote before I give it to Hillary, because they're absolutely right. If she has
and she's definitely going to win at this point, unless something radical changes, then we already know what she has. I went through this the other day. I'll go through it very quickly again. Here's what Hillary Clinton has supported and what she will continue to support. More arms going to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the Middle East to completely destroy Syria. And into that vacuum will go Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and al-Nusra that has been financed by the United States, and even cables, actual cables from Hillary Clinton with her outside advisor, Sidney Blumenthal, showed that it was Saudi Arabia that was funding the terrorist. So at what point do we stop a game and say if we're really against terrorism, then we have to stop selling all these arms to the people around the world who are giving them to the terrorists or using it in the case of Saudi Arabia? Saudi Arabia is a purely terrorist state. Look at what they're doing in Yemen. Look at what they are doing in Syria. Look what they did in other countries. So you stop that, but she's for that. You have to stop the regime changes. She was personally responsible for overthrowing the democratically elected government in Honduras and fomenting the rebellion in the Ukraine. We have the emails to prove that. She is also for the Trans-Pacific Partnership. She went on multiple visits to countries to promote hydrofracking. She's a big pro-hydrofracking person. Now look at the problems we're having with hydrofracking in the United States. The largest earthquake in the history of Kansas happened last week. It was due to hydrofracking. And also in Oklahoma. Oklahoma's had more earthquakes in the last 12 months than all the rest of America's had in the last year. Hydrofracking, plus the destruction of our water and the people's health around those wells. Is that what we want? She has supported Wall Street. She has refused to reinstate or even consider reinstating the Glass-Steagall Act or the Commodities Future Trading Act. She has refused to challenge the military-industrial complex, and she is behind the $1 trillion additional money going to re-nuke a whole new generation of nukes. She fully supports Israel and its position with Palestine. So this is what we're looking at. She has presented no program to decontaminate the world by going off the oil, gas, nuclear. She is a big supporter of nuclear. And she supports the military-industrial complex. She does not and is adamantly opposed to a single-payer universal health care. So exactly how will all these people, including the ones I mentioned here earlier in the show, how will these 51% of the American public workers who are making less than $30,000 a year, quote, 38% of all American workers make less than $20,000 a year, 51% of all American workers make less than $30,000 a year, 62% of all American workers make less than $40,000 a year. 71% of all American workers make less than $50,000 a year. Well, then, how are they supposed to have money to pay their debts? Oh, I forgot. She supports debtors' prisons. I forgot. She supports the prison industrial complex where they can exploit prison labor. Oh, I forgot. She does not support giving up the war on drugs. She wants to double down on the war on drugs. She does not want to take away the heavy sentences for marijuana use. She will not allow any state to use marijuana. So if that's what you want more of, fine, then you'll get it. But a lot of us don't. I'm Gary Knoll. In studio, my brother Stephen and Sharon Willems. Sharon's a reporter and a journalist who has done a lot of articles, probably more than anyone else I know, on helping local issues, especially the Washington Square development plans and the altering of that neighborhood and its park to benefit New York University. She was there writing against that. But today I've asked him to come in for a different reason, and that is because I'm seeing the complete decimation and destruction of the small businesses in New York City. But unless you're actually looking for it, you may not pay attention to it. You might see on 1 month, 70 different places empty in a 30-block area, and you don't think anything about it because 2 or 3 months later, it's filled. Someone else takes its place. Why do we have all these empty businesses? What happens when all we have left are drug stores, mall stores, and banks, because that's where we're going. Steve, Sharon, nice to have you with us. Steve, you have statistics. Go down the statistics.
Well, the first statistic is the most shocking, is the number of court evictions of commercial tenants that occur each month in New York City. And when Bill de Blasio became mayor, it was 485 a month were being evicted. Today, last year, it was average 542 a month. We're estimating that well over 1,000 businesses a month are closing in New York City. And it's spread to every borough, every neighborhood, and it's being caused by the speculation and complete out of control of the rents and the abuses that come with the tenants from lease renewals. It's a disaster. And yet, the reason that we're launching a campaign against Mayor de Blasio is that we're holding him responsible. Now, you said you walk down the street year after year, and you see it getting worse, and everybody's angry at the landlords, and they're angry at the chains. The person that's more responsible than anyone is the mayor, and I'll tell you why. When he was running for public advocate is when the first big study came out that really described this crisis. It was an independent study done by the U.S. Latin Chamber of Commerce, and it showed that the rents were forcing 58% of the businesses were at fear of going out. 78% had laid off workers because they couldn't afford to keep them because of the rents, that the businesses could not compete with banks and franchises. And he was the champion. Mayor de Blasio was the champion of fighting for this bill that would called the Small Business Job Survival Act, which gave rights to the business owners and a 10-year lease, a right to renew on a 10-year lease. And if you couldn't reach an agreement, you went to arbitration. And he went to every forum where the businesses were there, and he championed it. And he also told the people and the businesses that he was going to take the city in another direction from former Mayor Bloomberg, which was anti-small business, pro-real estate, setting up business improvement districts that were run by banks and property owners, and welcoming franchises and through every major strip in the city of New York. So he was against all this, and he was going to take the city in another direction. As soon as he becomes mayor, nothing happened. He kept in place all of Bloomberg's policies, this whole structure that Bloomberg had, which was covering up all of these business closings, and also covering up that there was a solution there. Now, here's the problem, and the reason we're doing this petition, and by the way, we're really asking people who care about New York City to log on to SaveNYCJobs.org. That's SaveNYCJobs.org. The petition is there. And we're asking them to sign the petition, holding him responsible, but also passing it out and circulating it, because the public needs to know that he's a fraud. He is not a progressive champion of change and economic equality. He's flipped, basically, and he's following RIBNY, the real estate lobby of New York. And they're blocking this legislation that he once was the champion of. He is using his administration to deny even a hearing on this bill that would save every business, and he knows it. And so we're calling him out. And if you log on to that website, there's also five or six really good stories, factual, of his speeches, of where he stood, and it shows clearly how he completely changed and went on the side of the real estate. And basically, he's rigging the system. He's leading the rigging of the system for the real estate industry to keep the status quo and to protect the profits of all these landlords and not give rights to any of these small business owners.
Sharon, yes. Your position on this?
Well, it's been a real learning experience writing about this. And every time I write an article, I send out a query to the council members and the mayor and the public advocate. And if I do get a response, it's very vague and it really doesn't answer the question I'm asking. So last article I wrote, which was on the hearing, which I called a sham hearing, as did Sung-Soo Kim, who's been at this for 30 years, I sent out a query. I got one response back from six different people, and she said she's too busy to respond. So that's kind of sad. And I'm very appreciative of the villager for taking the lead on doing this. And the editor got a promise from the speaker of the council that she would hold a hearing on this bill. And her term's almost up, and nothing. So they held a hearing recently, but they wouldn't even allow the bill to be brought up. You couldn't mention it. I'd signed up to speak when the moderator said that you cannot mention Small Business Jobs Survival Act. I just bolted from there. So
shows you how fixed the system is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nothing new in New York. New York is just one big septic tank. Right. Filled with corruption.
Well, the people.
Final
should,
thoughts, Steve.
Yeah, the people should be outraged, because what they're trying to do in rigging this system is they're trying to put forth as a substitute for this bill. They're putting forth five proposals that were created in 1986 to stop the original version of the Small Business Jobs Act that were written by the real estate industry, and were rejected. And now 30 years later. They dusted these disgraceful bill proposals, and they're holding hearings, and they're trying to pass one of these proposals.
What can the listeners do?
Well, they can log on to savenycjobs.org. They can sign the petition, but they can also send that petition all around. Get it out in the public, because the real estate industry has so much power in New York City, and they fund so many organizations that nobody's fighting for the small business people, but they need to know that their mayor, Mr. Progressive, is no longer Mr. Progressive. Not when it comes to real estate. He's not progressive.
One final comment, Steve. How many businesses have been forced out, small businesses of New York?
Well, since de Blasio became...
No, go back. Let's go back next 10, 20 years. How many are gone?
At least a quarter of a million.
Quarter of a million. Well, remember, each one of those businesses might employ four, five, six.
Eight, average.
Eight. So eight times a quarter million.
Oh, yeah.
So you're dealing with several million New Yorkers who've lost their jobs because of the power of the realtors and the lack of power of the small business.
Well, I'll give you one last thing. But between 1994 and 2015, the courts in New York City issued 161,000 warrants to vacate for commercial businesses, which is it's beyond a crisis. I mean, what we have in New York City with this small business is a crisis. And the mayor, instead of standing up like he claimed he would do and pledged to do to take the city in another direction from Bloomberg, failed. There's no other way and he needs to be called out. And until people start signing petitions and holding him responsible, then...
Well, there's an election coming. That's one way to hold people responsible. Thank you both, Sharon Willems and Steve Nall, my brother, who's been an advocate for small businesses, is a volunteer doing this. He's not paid to do this for over 35 years. I'm Gary Nall. We're here for the people, not the politics. We'll be back tomorrow, a full hour with Danny Sheehan. We're going to deal, and by the way, I did not get in today to Dr. Stephen Pizzinick, the MD, PhD, who let out that rant yesterday about the coup going on in America. We had to do a whole lot of research on him and whether it's true or not, and we'll deal with that tomorrow at noon. Have a nice day, everyone.